Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College, brought to you by Wilson. Proud to be the official basketball of NCAA March Madness. Gear up for the holidays with free personalization on game balls now at wilson.com. Now, here's your host, Tim Doyle.
Welcome back to another episode of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Tim Doyle, alongside longtime friend. I mean, talk about no hair on our face type of friends. Jarrett Grasso, head coach of the Bryant Bulldogs. Coach, you spent almost 20 years paying your dues at multiple stops. You also had a head coaching job at Fordham in your 20s. You're finally the head coach of Bryant. What was that journey like for you?
You know, it's been a long road, and I've enjoyed every step of the journey. And, you know, got to work for some great guys, meet some great people along the way, you know, throughout the whole time, knowing I always wanted to be a head coach. You know, I was the son of a coach, grew up around the game like you did, Tim, and always knew where I wanted my path to go. And I was blessed to be around great people and learn the game from some great people. I was with Timmy Clouse at Iona for the last 8 years and really worked for one of the best guys in college basketball. Someone who, great coach, even better person. And, you know, after those 8 years, I knew I was really prepared for this next step.
Yeah, right away, you go right for the jugular. Tim Clouse single-handedly ruined my high school career as the head coach of St. Mary's. And I actually think he did to you as well. Is that true?
He ended my career as well. So my last game was that expense as well.
12-7-4. That's something you took from Coach Clouse. Could you dive a little bit more into that?
12 months a year, 7 days a week, 4 hours a day. Just believe if you're willing to work that amount of time, if your passion for the game and your love for the game is 12 months a year, 7 days a week, 4 hours a day, and you're really willing to put that much time into basketball, you have a chance to be a pro. You have a chance to become a part of a championship program. And a lot of guys say they want to do it. A lot of guys talk about it, but are you really committed to doing that? And very few are, but I haven't been around guys in this game, guys who are willing to put that kind of time and end up making money playing basketball. And those are the kind of guys we want to have here at Bryant.
You know, I think as a head coach that you kind of forget the impact that you have on your players and how they go on. And obviously over the course of your assistant coaching career, you've dealt with a lot of different guys. You've seen them go on to next phases of life. But I was reading a tweet from you recently about your own individual family and about spending more time with them. Now you're a young head coach. You're ambitious. You gave Syracuse all they could handle on opening night. I want to know how hard that is, that work-family balance.
You know, it's the hardest thing. And for me, it's the thing that I'm trying to perfect. And I'm not sure there's a perfection in it, but I'm going to chase that my whole career because I'm going to be a good father to my children and a good husband to my wife. And to me, that's the most important thing. And, you know, when I walk in that door and have my three children there, they just care that daddy's home. They don't care whether we won or lost. They don't care that we had 27 turnovers or we won for 17 from three. They care about daddy being home. They want to play with daddy. And, you know, like you said, the morning after the Syracuse game, I was on the bike getting a workout in and still a little beat down from that loss. Could have been a great win for us. And, you know, watching video as I was riding the bike, my son came in and made me pinky promise that I wouldn't take a phone call for 90 minutes so he could play with daddy. I said, why? He said, because I love playing with daddy. You know, when your son says something like that to you, you realize how important that piece of all of this is. And I'm never going to forget the fact that my family is going to come first. And those three kids at home, they need their time with their father. And I'm going to make sure that they get that.
Yeah, you had an amazing relationship with your father. And someone that I grew close with, you know, who passed recently, and you're just going through your social media accounts. If you don't know Coach Grasso, you could obviously see the connection he had with his dad. But at what age, Jarrett, do you kind of put your arm around your son and say, all right, now it's time to kind of dive into the X's and O's. We need to ice this ball screen here. See that guy's open in the corner. Like, those are the moments for me where, yeah, the first guy looked open, but it was actually the second guy. It was really diving into that. Is there going to be an age with your kids where you're going to be like, all right, time to flip that switch?
When he's ready for it, you know, I'm not going to push it. You know, both my boys have an interest in basketball and, you know, like little kids right now, you're talking about 4 and 2, but you know, when the time is right, and if it's something that they want to do, obviously that's going to be there to completely support it. And I hope they love the game, but whatever makes them happy and whatever they want to do, as long as they're happy, dad's going to be happy.
What was the biggest influence that your dad had on you as a coach?
Just the way to play the game. You know, we both grew up with fathers who were old school, kind of tough, blue collar, you know, man's man, you know, real men. And the biggest thing was always just about the toughness of the game and the work ethic of the game and the real gritty stuff. I learned a ton of basketball from my father and X and O's and the way the game should be played and him talking 20 years ago about how teams should have 5 shooters on the floor and things where I thought he was way ahead of the curve. But for me, it was more about that grimy, being in the gym, tough Saturday morning pickup games and getting up at 6 a.m. for a workout, like that tough stuff, the tough blue collar, real coaches, coach type stuff that you only learn being in a basketball family. You know, you only learn those things when you're around it every day. And that's kind of the biggest things I took from him, is just being a blue collar basketball guy and coaching the game because you love it and having the impact on players' lives and the real reason that we do this.
You know, I grew up with Coach Grasso. Full disclosure, we've known each other since we're, you know, single digits, right? And was a great player in high school at St. Anthony's on Long Island, then went on to maybe an even better career in college at Quinnipiac. But I will say this, he wasn't always well-liked. All right, I liked him because he had that confidence. He had that chip on his shoulder. Do you look for kids that had kind of similar style to you when you go out recruiting? Or has the game completely changed?
Absolutely. I say all the time, I need to coach guys who are like me. And I need guys with an edge and a chip on their shoulder. And I like guys who are a little bit different. A little, you know, they've got a swagger and aren't going to back down from anyone. And it's the only reason I was a good player. I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't all that gifted. I just thought I was good, worked really hard at it, and no one was going to tell me that I wasn't going to be a good player. Like I wasn't, that no one was stopping me from becoming the player I wanted to be. That was my mindset. And I want guys with the same mindset. So a lot of the players I've had are guys who are under recruited. Our point guard now, Mike Green, didn't have a Division I or Division II offer. Look at him now. He's one of the best point guards in the country. He was on Rookie of the Year in our league. He's has a chance to be a phenomenal player. He's got a chip on his shoulder and he's nasty. He's not afraid of anything. So I want guys like that, guys who were like myself and gym rats who love the game, and no one could tell them that they weren't going to make it. Because there was no one who could ever tell me I wasn't going to be a Division I player. No one could ever tell me I wasn't going to be a Division I head coach. Like, no, I'm just going to find a way. I don't want guys who are the same way and guys who say, I'm going to make it. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to make it. No one's stopping me from getting where I want to go. No one's stopping me from reaching my goals and my dreams.
Yeah, I mean, I think that your point is very poignant because – you know, I talked about your career playing and then, you know, you go on to Quinnipiac where you have a stellar career. And let's just be honest. There was a coaching opening there a couple of years ago. Obviously, your name was mentioned because of what you did previously at Iona as an assistant. You don't get the job. Now, you end up in Bryan. Everything has worked out. But at that time, great player, Quinnipiac. You think that this is the opportunity. You paid your dues. You don't get that job. What did that feel like?
You know, it's a punch in the gut. And anytime there's an opportunity or you're something you feel you've worked so hard for and you have a goal and a dream and it doesn't end up working out, you know, it's a punch in the gut. But then you get back up and you say, what's next? You know, I was 2 days later. Okay, so now we're going to go. I'm back at Iona. We're going to win another championship. They didn't want to hire me, so we're going to win our 6th championship in a row now at Iona. So I wasn't down for very long. You know, you take that punch and you get back up and you say, okay, time to go recruiting. They're in our league. What are we going to do to beat them? We're going to go get players. We're going to continue beating them. That's got to be the mindset because it's a hard business. There's a ton of great head coaches out there. Baker Dunleavy has done a phenomenal job at Quinnipiac and I've been involved with other jobs. You know, it's part of the business, but you always still as that player, you have that chip on your shoulder and that confidence. It's the same thing as a coach. When you're confident in what you do, you say, well, why isn't it me? You know, maybe that opportunity should have been mine. Or you just get back to work and keep trying to outwork people.
What's been the biggest surprise to you as a head coach? I mean, you're in your third season now, but what surprised you from being an assistant to being a head coach?
You know, I'll be honest with you, the stretch I had at Fordham where I was the interim head coach there was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. It was a difficult situation, but for 3 months, I got thrown to the fire. You know, I took over, I inherited a team that midseason and was told, treat this like it's your own program. So I recruited, got 5 commitments, was fundraising. We're still getting good crowds. We're coaching, you know, was doing the whole job. And I kind of learned on the fly. I didn't know what I was doing. I was 29 years old thinking, you know, I had the world by the balls and I was just going to figure it out and we're going to win and this is going to work out. But I was given the opportunity to coach a team for 3 months. And I learned more in that 3 months than I probably did in the next 10 years for when the next opportunity came, what to be prepared for. So I think after doing that and working for Timmy Clouse at Iona, I was really prepared to take over. So, I mean, just the time management piece, sometimes you got to tell people no. You know, there's a lot of things that get thrown at you. And as my family has grown now to 3 children, like there's times that speaking engagements or different things that people ask you to do, sometimes you have to say no because you have a family and your team. Those are the two most important things.
Yeah, you have an early season setback to Syracuse, then you knock off New Hampshire. Where is your team at after you lose to Syracuse? Obviously, you can go check out the clips between Coach Boeheim, Coach Grasso, maybe a misunderstanding, a scheduling issue. The world is turned upside down. You played the game. You almost won. You didn't win. What was the message after the team? Because you did come back and win the next game. How important was that next game?
Our guy just wanted to get back out there and play. Like, this is such a strange year in general, obviously, with everything going on. So, first off, when our guys have an opportunity to play a game, it's a great day. My kids love to compete. My guys want to play games. Like, I have hoopers. They don't want to come and practice, you know, 10 days in a row. They want to practice a couple days, and then they want to go and compete. So, we lost that game, and we had returners who have a chip on their shoulder. We can't lose another close game. We're pissed because we lost some close games last year. We got to stop losing close games. And those guys were angry. They thought we should have won. And not because it was Syracuse and it would have been an upset. They just thought they were better than them and should have won. Like, they thought we outplayed them and it was a game we should have won. So we got back to work, had a couple of good practices, and then ready for New Hampshire to go out and play against a good New Hampshire team on the road who had beat us last year. So our guys were ready and performed at a high level.
Yeah, this story probably should only be told at a watering hole. And I don't know, ready to drink right now, I'll be 100% honest, but you got to put yourself in a time capsule, all right? Picture Coach Grasso and myself driving in, I believe it was a Jeep. Is that correct, Coach?
Yes.
Yeah, and
Blue Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah, we were driving to ABCD camp. At the time, it was Adidas. And I had been fortunate enough to go to camp my junior year, sophomore going into junior year. So I had an advantage of knowing when you go to camps like that, if you get the rebound, you can't pass to anybody, okay? Which was my strength, but you knew not to pass to anybody. So Coach Grasso was there working out with some of the counselors, you know, some of the high-level guys and competing with them, going through drills with them. But he happened to see one of the highlights of my basketball career where I had 28 points. I think I was 13 or 14 from the field. And it was an ABCD kind of moment. And I remember driving back in his Jeep. Now you gotta remember this 20 years ago, people. He said to me, he goes, I think you should just turn pro right now, right? And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, just say you're gonna turn pro. All the scouts will come and watch you. He's like, you'll create a lot of buzz. And that's when everyone was turning pro early. So I remember sitting next to him. I was like, dude, I'm hoping to get like a low major scholarship. And you're like, nah, just say you're going to go pro. Then someone will just offer you.
I was a marketing genius. I was LeVar Ball before this time. I had you ready. I think about what we could have done for your career if you just listened to me.
If I would have listened to you, yeah, maybe my whole career is there. Maybe we're not hosting this podcast together right now. What actually was going through your head at that point?
Listen, you had a great game. You were the high scorer in camp that day. You had 20. I literally think you were 14 for 15 from the field. 6'6", skilled, good-looking kid. I mean, you had it all going for you. Stud in your community. Everyone knows you in Long Island. Huge family name. Everyone knows the Doyles in Long Island basketball. Timmy Doyle just had 28 points at ABCD camp. Besides, he's putting his name in the draft. Imagine the headlines. I mean, it would have been unbelievable for Long Island basketball. Your dad would have picked it up. It would have been a huge thing. And I think we really had something going. You decided not to, you didn't jump on it. You obviously had a great college career at St. John's and Northwestern, but I thought better of you. I thought you were a pro at that point. My evaluation was off.
Yeah, you did. You did think a little bit too much of me. Do you lay in bed at night? Now you got 3 beautiful kids, beautiful wife. Do you think of the same marketing schemes at Bryant? Do you think of those same things? You know, because we're old school. We got the Al McGuire's handing out ice creams in the stands. We got that old school blood in us. But now it's social media. Like, do you think that way as a head coach, or do you have maybe way too other thing, too many things to worry about?
Absolutely. I'm always looking at ways to market our program. I've done some things in recruiting and social media and all that. You're always trying to market. You're always trying to get the Bryant name out there. You know, when I took the job here, people in New York didn't know what Bryant was. You know, we were trying to spread our name and get our brand out there. And I think in 2 years, we've really been able to do that in recruiting. So we're always looking to market and get our name out there.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the New York metropolitan area. Obviously, we both have strong ties there. You coached there for many years, won a bunch of championships at Iona. But when you're a quote-unquote smaller school, when you recruit, do you have to stick to a region? Do you think that that's a strength? And I, this is maybe just some advice, not just for Division I coaches, Division II coaches, coaches out there. Do you kind of stick to a hotspot, or are you open to kind of expanding across the country?
I mean, we recruit nationally. We do a lot with transfers, junior college guys. We do recruit nationally, but a lot of times it comes down to your relationships. You know, the coaches you know and trust are the guys who are going to help you with players. So sometimes you have to know, you know, I'm not going to spin my wheel to the kid in Texas. His AU coach is helping this program. And we know, you know, there's all the relationship stuff. So a lot of my relationship are in the metropolitan area, the Northeast, New England. So I always tend to tap into those relationships, but we've been able to kind of spread our wings, especially in the transfer market, and recruit nationally. And I think it's really helped our program.
Yeah, you're a big product guy. I need to know, is that gel or are you more of a paste guy with the hair?
I'm a straight gel guy.
Is there any coach, forget about X's and O's, that you look up to hair-wise? And I'll let you think about it, okay? Because I'll go through some of the top hairdos, right? We got obviously Jay Wright, which is kind of more from a slick back, more to a comb over. Mike Bray has gone from the comb over now more to the slick back. There's coaches out there, funny dudes across, but is there one coach you look at that guy's hair and you go, that guy's got pretty good hair?
Right now, it's got to be Shaka Smart. I mean, I love the direction he's gone in of late. I mean, I got to go with Shaka right now. If I'm picking one guy, I'm jumping on the Shaka bandwagon.
The Shaka Smart was a lot to digest. Like, you had to do the double take. You know what I mean? Like school starts again. You know, when you just go back to school and like the kid just looks different. Like, he either grew 5 inches. Like, that's what it felt like when I saw Shaka Smart. Frank Martin lost a lot of his hair because of COVID-19. That was another like, whoa moment. But okay, Shaka Smart, best hair. How about hair gel? Is there a gel guy that you look towards?
You know, that's a tough one. I don't really have a guy right now. I mean, it's always been, Jay's always been the hair guy. You know, Jay's always, we grew up around Hofstra basketball, and Jay's always been the smooth hair guy.
Is there one coach that you looked at while you were a kid, while you sat with your father, Fred, watch games? Was there a coach that you wanted to kind of emulate their style?
I mean, Jay Wright was always a guy growing up just because being around the Hofstra program and knowing Jay, I mean, he does it all. He's kind of the whole package. He can coach. He's great with people, great recruiter, great with the media. So he was always a guy just because he was so well-rounded. So as a kid, and he was somebody I knew, so he was always someone I looked up to and followed just because he's the whole package in this game.
All right, last question for you. We appreciate your time. When you got the job, you talked about changing the culture. If you had to say this was a 10-prong approach, it might be 150 prongs, but let's not go that far, right? If it's a 10-prong approach at Bryant, where are you at right now?
I mean, we're close. I like where our program is at. I like our character. I like our toughness. I like our work ethic. And those are the things that the culture's about. You know, that's what you're trying to build. And it starts with the people. And I like the people we have in our program. I like my staff. I like my guys. They fit kind of my character and the way I want to coach and the way I want to play. So I think the culture is moving in the right direction, and we're going to continue to recruit guys who love to play basketball, want to get coached hard, want to get a great education at a beautiful university, and want to be part of something special, to have a chance to cut down nets and win the first NCAA tournament at Bryant.
Well, Coach, your squad in year three is heading in the right direction. And let's be honest, right? If it doesn't work out on the sidelines, I mean, you're a marketing genius. I dropped the ball. Bryant needs to be listening to whatever you need to say. We got to put 400 cheerleaders on the sideline. They got to put 400 cheerleaders on. Whatever Coach Grasso says, they have to move forward with that. The guy is a marketing whiz. We thank you so much for your time today on the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Coach Grasso and Bryant Bulldogs, wish you guys luck this year. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Timmy. Appreciate you having me, pal.